Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Molly Ringwald, who will be performing Friday at Amp by Strathmore up in Bethesda. Molly, thanks so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, obviously, most of us know you as an actress, but you're going to be coming doing some jazz crooner stuff. What age did you start actually singing?
Well, actually, I was a singer before I was an actress. My father, Bob Ringwald, was a traditional jazz musician, so I grew up singing jazz, actually, from the time that I was three and a half. And I always thought that that's what I was going to pursue. I was going to be a singer when I grew up, and then the acting kind of, I got a little distracted by the acting. and it took me a while to get back to the music, but it's something that I really wanted to do for a while. It's just kind of, you know, in my blood.
And how did you fall in love with that sort of style? You know, that jazz crooner stuff is silky smooth.
You know, I love jazz music. I mean, my dad, you know, I grew up listening to really traditional, you know, Louis Armstrong and, you know, Vic Spiderbeck and, you know, these really old-timey jazz musicians. And I feel like the music that I like is just, you know, it's the Great American Songbook, and I feel like it's kind of one of our national treasures. It's, you know, the music is so interesting and so witty, and, you know, there's just nothing like it.
Yeah, it's a true American art form, you know, one of our only original ones. Tell us who's going to be on stage with you, you know, your band, drums, bass.
On piano, it's Peter Smith. And on bass, it's, well, okay, here's who I usually have with me. I don't know exactly who is booked for this particular gig. Usually
right.
It's, I mean, for sure, Peter, because he goes with me everywhere. Sometimes it's Trevor Ware on bass, sometimes it's Clayton Cameron, but it might be Gary Wong or Tony Jefferson, so I'm not sure.
Gotcha. Well, you know, regardless of who's on stage with you, what sort of songs can we expect to hear?
You know, some of the stuff I do, it's on my album, which is called Except Sometimes, but, you know, we're putting a lot of, you know, new stuff, in the group and, in the set list. And, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of known I'm sort of pathological about not being able to stick to a set list, but it's one of the things I love about jazz is that it's, you know, it's different every night. And, you know, a lot of it depends on the feeling that I get from the audience, too. You know, I unlike film or TV, you know, it's one of those situations where the audience really kind of, in a way, informs what I do. You know, I think, they're really going to like this song or they're not really going to like that song. And so I like to sort of keep it loose.
Well, there you go. There you heard it here first. Molly Ringwald, pathological set changer. Awesome.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of my musicians, you know, we had to put the songbooks in alphabetical order so they could flip through really quickly.
You seem like such a connoisseur. I'm surprised it's not chronological order. Did it really work them? Oh, that's hilarious. All right, well, regardless of your pathological nature, I know one song we might hear is Don't You Forget About Me, made famous by Simple Minds from Breakfast Club. I'm sure you've been asked this a million times before, but what do you think makes that song so timeless? And you know, why did you choose to sing it in your show?
You know, when I was coming up with the set list for my album, John Hughes passed away, and, you know, it was a big shock to me, and I think, you know, everyone around the world. I think he was, you know, pretty beloved, and I thought it would really be interesting to do it as a jazz ballad, you know, and so I worked with Peter, and we found these really, you know, he found these beautiful chords to go behind it, and it just, I don't know. It's just I wanted to put it on as a tribute to him and also for the people who primarily know me as an actress. I thought it would be like a nice bridge to this music that I'm doing now. So I can't say for sure that I will play it. I usually do, but like I said, it's nothing set in stone.
Well, that's good. Keeps us on the edge of our seats.
Yeah.
Breakfast Club just celebrated its 30th anniversary. I'm sure people come up to you all the time on the street still and say, I love that movie. What do you think makes the movie itself so timeless?
You know, I think there were not that many movies that really took teenagers seriously. You know, most of the so-called teen movies before we did The Breakfast Club were sort of these almost like sexploitation movies or like really broad comedies, you know, like right. Porky's or Animal House or whatever. Well, that was college, but you know what I mean. So this was really the first time that it took teenagers really seriously. It was from their point of view, and it was profound, you know, and I think everybody has to be a teenager at some point. Everybody has to go through high school. Everybody has to go through that period of time where they feel like nobody understands them. And so it just sort of hits the spot. And also because it only takes place in one day, I think it manages to seem a lot less dated than other movies. You know, we only have one costume, but the clothes really haven't changed that much. You know, I mean, I see kids at my daughter's school, and they're pretty much wearing what Allison wore or, you know, what Clara wore. So I feel like for that, it was kind of lucky. It sort of kept it in this way that it just, you can't really tell exactly what time period it's in. And I think until somebody makes a movie that's as good as that, you know, about teenagers, I think it's just going to keep speaking to multiple generations.
Yeah, and good luck to that filmmaker who tries to make it as good as that.
Yeah, exactly.
bring it on. Molly just threw down the challenge. you mentioned Ally Sheedy. Do you still stay in touch with her or any of the other Brat Pack folks, you know, Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, any of them?
You know, I see them from time to time, usually for, you know, like I went to South by Southwest when we celebrated the 30th year, and I got to hang out with Ally Sheedy, who I love. I mean, all of them, you know, I don't get to see them that often, but whenever I do, I feel like, you know, even though it was just 3 months of our lives that we spent making the movie, I feel like we're sort of inextricably linked in our lives because it had such a profound effect on us.
Yeah, and all of you inextricably linked with John Hughes. It's funny, the Kennedy Center just hosted a John Hughes celebration of Home Alone's 25th anniversary, which is interesting. You know, in his day, he didn't really, you know, get sort of that highbrow love, you know, no nominations, award season, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, but his movies were so beloved by the fans, by, you know, the mainstream public. Do you think that, you know, now that he's passed away and, you know, time marches on, do you think that, you know, his legacy will continue to grow even in the, you know, highbrow circles?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. You know, I don't think that he really got the sort of respect that he should have, you know, intellectually. But I don't really think that he seeked it out, especially. Like, I don't think that was where his focus was. I think he just, you know, wrote these scripts. He made these movies. He really had sort of a unique point of view. But they're really good. I mean, I think he has, you know, even though he didn't make as many movies as I wish he would have made, I think, you know, especially the ones that he directed, I really think they stand the test of time. I mean, you know, Breakfast Club and 16 Candles and Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Planes,
that was,
Trains.
Oh. Yeah, it was so unique. And and I think as time goes on, he'll get even, you know, more honors. I think you really sort of hit the nail on the head when you said that, you know, sort of highbrow and lowbrow, because he does really sort of cross these divides, you know, with generations and with you know, multiple ethnicities. You know, everybody loves John Hughes movies. It's pretty remarkable, you know, and really, yeah. It continues to astound me, but, you know, I always loved him and his movies.
Well, you continue to astound us. So.
Well.
Thanks. Yeah, we're excited to see you at Strathmore by AMP on Friday. Do you have any final words of, you know, what's the final sell? Let's say our listeners are on the fence about coming to see you. They love your movies and they're interested in your music. Why should they come out? Why get them out there?
I'm not very good at selling myself. I think it's just a fun night. You know, it's something that I really enjoy, and I think that if you enjoy something that much, I think other people are bound to enjoy it too. You know, the musicians, every musician that I perform with is really great. We just have a really great time together, and I think the feedback that I most often get when people come to the show is that they just really have a really good time and they feel really good. So I think if you want to feel good, come to the show.
There's a sell right there. And see, all right, Molly Ringwald, thanks. It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for taking the time out, and we'll see you Friday.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.